You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Dementia is a general term for a decline in memory and mental ability, severe enough to interfere with day-to-day life. Now, Alzheimer's disease is the most common type of dementia and accounts for 60 to 80% of all dementia cases. Although memory loss is a telltale symptom of dementia, there are other core mental functions symptoms, such as communication issues, language problems, inability to focus and pay attention, problems with reasoning and judgment, and even impairment in visual perception. Today on Wellness for Life, we are going to do a deep dive into dementia, and I'm honored to have the best-selling author of Dementia Reimagined, Dr. Tia Powell. She's a board-certified psychiatrist, director of the Center for Bioethics at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and her bioethics expertise is in the area of dementia, health policy, end-of-life care, and decision-making capacity. Welcome, Dr. Tia.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here. It's really nice to be able to be on your show.
I so appreciate it. Now, I understand that you're a psychiatrist, but can you tell me what really got you into studying dementia?
Well, you know, as is the case in so many families across the country, and for that matter around the world, dementia's in my family. So both my grandmother had dementia when I was sort of a young adult, and then later on my mother had dementia. So that gets your attention. You know, I'm a physician and you feel responsible. You want to do the right thing. But I really realized that, you know, what I learned in medical school didn't really prepare me to be a family member of somebody with dementia. I didn't really understand as much as I wanted to about what it was, how do I help this person? Am I at risk? You know, what do I know about that? All of those questions. So I really kind of set out to learn more and then try and share that, because I know there's so many other people that are asking the same kind of questions.
Oh, I'll tell you, my mother, you know, she's 88 year young, and that's the scariest thing for her is losing her mind, losing her memory, losing her ability to recognize things. And she calls it old-timer disease. You know, she's Korean. We're Korean, so she has a little language, but it doesn't matter. I know exactly what she's talking about, and it's pretty scary for her. So, you know what? I know a lot about natural care and natural care medicine. I'm talking about natural medicine to help her. And we give her a lot of supplements. We talk about exercise and all that. But your book is a little different. It's not just, you know, you really talk into about the caretaking, which is very unique.
Yeah. So the book, you know, tries to do a number of things. I hope it manages to pull them off. That will be for the readers to decide. It looks at the history of dementia. So it wasn't that long ago that not just people, but physicians didn't really think of dementia as an illness. They just thought, oh, I don't know, you know, some old people, they get stupid. What are you going to do? You know, so there was no effort to study it. And if you don't study it, you don't find out what you can do about it or what's happening. And you don't figure out why some people seem to have this as they get older and others do not. So it was really, you know, a little bit more than 100 years ago when people really started to think about dementia. And then it kind of falls away for a while and comes back maybe in the 1970s or so. So one of the things I wanted to do is, what's up with that? Because, you know, old people have always been with us. Dementia's always been with us. Why didn't we recognize it? So there's a lot to say about that, and you know, I won't go through the whole argument here, but a lot of people with dementia in the old days, you know, certainly 100 years ago, people just thought, you know, their brains are just messed up. We'll put them in the mental hospital with all the people with serious mental illness. And the bad news there is that though there were some important exceptions, treatment for severe mental illness 100 years ago and more was not very kind. There were really terrible punitive measures, chaining people. It's just heartbreaking. I won't, you know, go into all the gory details with the, you know, we're triggering for some people, but man, that was not a great place to be lumped, you know, in with everybody.
You know, so now I think part of that might be because They were just afraid of the people. They didn't know what it was, you know, and not recognizing that it is an illness and trying to figure it out and doing more of a, you know, detective work. Rather, they basically wanted to put them away and not see them, you know, right? And it's such a sad thing. You're right. But now it's different. Now we are having such a high rate of dementia. You can't deny it.
Well, that's absolutely true. And it's partly the success of medicine in some ways. We are living a lot longer than we used to. When they set the retirement age at 65, you know, 100 or more years ago, that's how long people lived. Now, a lot of people that are living into their 80s and 90s, I bet you know some people that are in their hundreds. So, you know, we've gotten much better in taking care of things like cancer and heart disease and all kinds of stuff that used to flat out kill people. And now you live longer, but a lot of people do have disabilities. And the disability a lot of people have and are going to get is dementia, because the single biggest risk factor for that is age. So as our population ages, we can expect a lot more people to have dementia. So it's definitely coming up in the ranks, you know.
Right. I treat dementia in my practice, and some of the patients, they come in, a lot of it is actually related, I think, to the drug, because as they get older, they have more prescriptions that they've got to take. So the drug reactions and how it affects the mitochondria of the brain, how it affects the oxygenation, how it affects the blood flow, perfusion, all that. But also, I think that, I mean, one case was a severe dementia immediately after she came out of a surgery for hip replacement. And that was amazing. I mean, she was an 89, I believe. 89, dancing every week. I mean, sharp, sharp brain. And she just changed overnight.
So, you know, that's really, I just want to support what you're saying, Susanna. I think a huge problem in geriatrics and geriatric specialists, of which there are way too few, one of the main things that they get upset about is older people on too many medicines. So when people, it might be a good medicine for you, but if you are being prescribed 10 or 12 medicines, which is totally common for older people, no one's ever been able to do a study to see how those medicines interact with each other. So I certainly don't want all your listeners to say, well, that's it, I'm stopping all my medicines right now today.
No, I
understand. Probably not safe. You need to talk to somebody. Right. But there is a good geriatrician spends a lot of her time saying, you know, I think we ought to try it without this one and this one. And if that works for 3 weeks, I'm going to try the next two. So that is a lot of what geriatricians do, is try to whittle down to the essentials, the medicines you need, and piling one more on top of the other for older people. You're absolutely right. It can have, you know, really can sedate you, and that's really dangerous. If you're over medicated, you can, and your balance isn't as great as it used to be, you can fall, you break that hip, and man, that can be all it takes for a frail older person. That can really be the downhill slide. And the other issue is, you mentioned surgery. If you're older, and, you know, your brain may be a little bit more frail, just like the rest of you, just like it's easier to break that hip, the general anesthesia of surgery may have a bigger problem for you. But it's possible that lady had delirium. We know that for a lot of people, they go in and have a big procedure, and they do come out with delirium, which is mostly treatable, but it's often undiagnosed. So that's another thing for your listeners and family members to think about and ask about. If they have a loved one who goes in for surgery and, wow, she does not look the same, it could be, maybe she had a stroke, but it could be delirium. And if they press people to say, could you maybe get a specialist? Could a neurologist take a look? Could a geriatrician take a look at her? You might be able to turn some of that around. So it's just another, you know, another thing to have in your toolbox if you're trying to help support an older person.
That's such a great point. You know, there are a lot of books out there now with Bredesen's work and other doctors talking about getting rid of the inflammation in the brain, anti-inflammatory diets, all of this to help get rid of a dementia, restore your memory, et cetera. Is there a cure? I mean, do you believe that there's a cure? Especially my husband's in the baby boomer. Well, my husband's not going to get, I got to tell you that. He is so sharp. There's no way. And he's like, you know, 72 now. But do you think that there could be a cure for dementia?
There might be one someday, but I don't think it's coming in time for me, and I'm a baby boomer, and I don't think it's coming in time for the baby boom generation. All of the big clinical studies that have tried to do things like see if we can decrease amyloid and will that improve things, and indeed some other people that are making claims about, you know, supplements and stuff, the only things that really seem to help support cognitive function, they don't prevent dementia, and they certainly don't cure dementia. There is absolutely no cure for dementia right now. And you can, you know, NIH is very clear about this. There's really, unfortunately, for me, no wiggle room on that. I think maybe for my kids, for my kids' kids, but I think the science has kind of gotten off on the wrong track, and we need to really rethink our hypotheses. I think, you know, amyloid plays some kind of role, and it's obviously not good for you, but it's not as simple as we thought it was. Just getting rid of amyloid does not seem to do the trick. So it looks like it's multifactorial. There's a lot of different things going on. And for now, I think we're going to have to really think about, we can't cure it right now, but that doesn't mean we have to be hopeless. That doesn't mean that everybody who's older, maybe worried about getting dementia, or maybe they've recently had that diagnosis. I really hate for that whole group to say, well, that's it, I'm done for. There's nothing to hope for. My life is over. I don't want to go there. I really think the vast majority of people who do have dementia are in the early phases, and they can have a good life, a happy life. And I think, you know, part of our focus on curing dementia, and I do hope people will keep working on that, but part of the focus on cure is, as I think, made us not do as good a job as we could have in thinking about, well, how do we support the people who've already got it? What can we do in our communities? How can we help people stay home, be safe, enjoy their lives, be with their family? What are some of the things we can do? And there are good people working on that, but I think that for me is what I'd like to work on. I'd like to figure out, you know, what makes me happy and what could I kind of pack and bring with me to the land of dementia if I go there? What would I want? What would I want to be able to do? What kind of care would I want? And that's what I'm kind of trying to hope people will think more about.
Well, in your book, Dementia Reimagined, that's exactly what you do, is that you talk about, yes, we are going towards that direction of dementia. Living with dementia is really important, though, not feeling so overly stressed. I mean, stress in of itself can affect our brain, our hippocampus, causing more issues. Working with that and then creating a community of people who love you. You know, my mother, she will never, in our family, in our culture, we don't put our parents in, they live with us, basically. They live with whoever can handle the day-to-day operations, and they live with us. And everyone, and we have four kids in our family. My mother has lived with every one of her kids, which is awesome. So she lived with us for 7 years, and now she's living with my younger sister. So this is important. And which I think has continually brought so much more love and happiness and feelings of safety in my mother's life. So she really enjoys her life. I mean, no, my mom does not have dementia. Mm-hmm. She might have a little bit of memory loss, but not where it would go towards a dementia case. She mm-hmm. has a lot of wonderful things that, and she can communicate. And sometimes what I think about memory loss is really selective memory loss. It's like you don't put any attention to it, so you don't even put it into your brain. You know what I mean?
Right. Sometimes it has to do with concentration, absolutely. That wasn't important to me, so I didn't really file it away properly, so now I don't have it. And that can absolutely be an issue.
Absolutely.
I do think, you know, your mother is so lucky to have that loving family who are capable of taking care of her, know how to do it well, consult with each other. And there are people who have that wonderful safety net, but the really sad thing is that there are so many elders who don't have that. They have outlived everybody in their family. It's not that their family's neglectful. Their family's gone. You know, they maybe didn't marry or their kids are gone. You know, unfortunately, we have this terrible opioid crisis and young people are dying. So they're definitely, horribly, our parents who are outliving their kids now for a variety.
Right.
But including that one. So, you know, part of the question for us as a society and a community is, whoa, here's, you know, a lovely older person living on her own in the community, no family. We can't just leave her hanging. what's to be done there? You know, what's the right thing to do? And I think a lot more work, we need to think about that. Like, what's the right way to support her? We don't want to take away people's rights. We don't want to make her feel like, well, you're our prisoner. You have to come live in the nursing home. We don't care what you say about it. We don't want to do that. But right. You also don't want her to be, you know, trying to get up and down the fourth floor walk up, carrying her groceries. Like, yeah, that's not right either.
No, so, absolutely. You know,
so maybe thinking about housing, there's so many things we could do to really kind of be inclusive of people at every phase in life and every part of the age range. So thinking about, you know, more accessible housing in an urban area, it's a lot easier to have maybe some groceries, some basics delivered, have meals on wheels. So there are certainly communities where a lot of that stuff is in place, and then there are other communities where either it's not in place or it's just really hard to do. You know, if you're in a super rural area where, you know, half the country's under snow for half the year, it's really tough to get your groceries delivered. You know, it's really, so thinking about, well, what do we do for that person? That's, so that, you know, I am not claiming to have all the answers. I think I do have some questions that I'd love to, like, let's get some smart people and begin to think about what's the right thing to do? How can we help people?
Right. I know that in Korea, where I'm from, they actually have the federally, I believe, they created homes for the elderly so that, you know, you can have access to that. I think, what I understood from my mother is that it doesn't cost anything. But I don't think that's available.
They got you covered.
Here. Yeah.
It is not. Exactly. Well, not at that level. Yeah.
No, not at all. But, you know, that's one thing I think that is what's missing here in America is the respect and and doing what's right for the elderly people, having more programs for the elderly people. Long-term care. Do you believe in long-term care? You know, I'm talking about insurance.
Yeah. I think, listen, we need lots of options because they're all different kinds of people. To say somebody is older, well, that doesn't tell us very much about that person. So we need to have lots of flexibility, a lot more options, and we need to help people pay for different kinds of options. So right now, you know, there's the nursing home, super expensive, pretty, I don't want to say restrictive in a negative way, because I think there's some wonderful nursing homes, and we will always need nursing homes for people who really need end-stage care, and it's not something their family can deliver. But I think long-term care insurance is very expensive, and it's really hard to get. The government employees actually have access to a pretty good plan, and some people have argued, if we could sort of expand that out to a larger group of people, that might be helpful. Because right now, basically what a lot of people do is they spend down their assets. They don't have enough money to pay privately for a nursing home, and so they spend down their assets and get on Medicaid. But in some states, they're cutting back on Medicaid. Medicaid's awfully expensive, and they don't want the middle class kind of throwing away their assets and coming on to Medicaid. And, you know, I can appreciate all sides in this. I can see how the state wants to be able to cap its expenses, but people have to go somewhere. You know, I mean, so I think we have a problem now, but it's really going to get bigger and more serious over the next 10 years as we really start to see people who do need to be in a nursing home, who either can't get Medicaid or, you know, they're kind of stuck in the middle, or Medicaid has been cut way back in their state. Wow, what's going to happen? I mean, that is really tricky. So, and you can't always buy long-term care insurance. Unlike with health insurance, long-term care is allowed to turn you down for a pre-existing condition. So if maybe, and, you know, I don't know what all the pre-existing conditions are, but for somebody like me, I just wrote a book saying my mom and my grandma had dementia. I don't know if they're going to be so eager to sign me up. You know, anybody can know that about me. It's in the book. So, you know, and the other thing that really burns me up is that women pay about 50% more than otherwise similar men for long-term care insurance. It's perfectly legal, but insurance is based on, you know, the numbers. So a lot more men get free care from a spouse or an adult child, a daughter or wife, women often outlive their spouse, so their spouse can't take care of them, and they may need paid care, and we live longer, so we're more likely to need care generally and certainly more likely to get dementia. So women need more paid long-term care, so the insurance costs 50% as much. So that's the payback for stopping work early, taking care of your family, doing all the good kinds of things, including, you know, a devoted family like yours. If it came to the next generation, it might be really tricky for you and your siblings to get, for the women anyway, to get long-term care insurance.
Wow.
Now, they'll be mad at me for saying that, but I think it's a real thing to look at.
Absolutely. I mean, these are such important points that we all, you know, men and women, because men want to take care of their women, don't they, too?
Of course they do.
Absolutely. That's such an, I didn't even realize that was even the case. You know, you're mentioned about that your grandmother, and obviously this is on your mother's side, and then do you have children? I mean, you've got to also not only think about yourself, but your children's future as well. Is there a genetic component?
I have two adult kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, you know, yes, but for that, I don't feel so bleak about the genetics. So there's all different kinds of dementia. People who get early onset dementia, and there are some people who get dementia really early. There's some
like what age?
Groups. Well, like in their 50s, even sometimes in their 40s, but that's usually somebody who has a very specific dominant gene. So there are a couple of isolated groups where there's a lot of, you know, sort of second cousins getting married because it's, you know, way on an isolated island or on top of a mountain. So there's some places like that in the world. There's one community like that in Colombia where there is this wicked gene. And if you have that gene, you are going to get dementia and you're going to get it young. So a lot of people have gone down there to study and think, you know, how can we help these people? What is up with that? So that's a very specific kind of gene. For the more common forms of dementia that happen after you're 65, maybe not even until you're 85, that's usually multifactorial. So there are some genes, but there's a lot of different ones. And they do have some impact, but they don't really turn the key in the lock in the same way that those early onset genes do. They're sort of one factor among many. So there's one particularly common one called the APOE4 gene, which is kind of a mouthful. But anyway, that's one of the more common ones that's affiliated with late onset dementia. But you know what? Most of the people with late onset dementia don't even have that gene. So I don't see much point in getting tested for it. If you're positive and you already have a family history, you haven't learned anything. I mean, if I test for it and I'm positive, I already know. I'm at risk. Okay. I knew that. I knew that, right, you know, 25 years ago before the gene was available because my grandma had it. And if you test negative, you might think, hey, yay, I got a clean bill of health. But no, because as I say, the majority of people, even with Alzheimer's, which is sort of what this is looking for, don't have that gene. So much doesn't really help. So much
of these conditions are related to epigenetic issues. You know,
not even genetics. Yeah, it might be epigenetics, and it also might be, you know, something that you get at 70, 75, 80. Well, those years of life have to come in there too. So as you were talking earlier about diet, I think, and exercise. Exercise is the one thing that in every study really does look like there's some protective benefit there. It's not going to cure dementia. It doesn't absolutely prevent it. And if you have one of those really wicked genes that gives you the early onset, you know, if you hate doing push-ups, I know I wouldn't necessarily bother because I don't know that it's going to make that much difference. But for the rest of us who are worried about this late onset, how you live, it does seem to make a difference. You know, watch your blood pressure. We think some people have been getting little mini strokes. They maybe didn't even realize it. So, you know, pay attention to blood pressure. Stay fit. You don't have to be an Olympian. But if you can walk, if you can swim, if you can just sort of get yourself up off that couch, that's really helpful. And a lot of people, there have been a lot of studies of what's called the Mediterranean diet. It doesn't have to be so fancy, but it's basically you should eat lots of fruits and vegetables, which, you know, your grandma could have told you. And, you know, stay away from other things that are a little bit harder on you. You can have a little bit of wine, a little bit of even, you know, cheese and meat, but, you know, stick with fish if you can and all the fruits and vegetables. That's all good.
Well, that's all always, you know, just basic living and healthy living is what we're talking about, and getting the right oils in you, the fish oils, of course, the omegas, and staying away from inflammatory foods, you know, such as sugar and, you know, things that can activate, and of course, chemicals, pesticides, all the junk that's adulterating our food. Those are the things that we can all easily do that. So your book, Dementia Reimagined, that's in the bookstores, Amazon. Where can we find it?
I hope you can find it lots of places. If you Google Dementia Reimagined, you should be able to find it on Amazon. I understand that not everybody loves Amazon anymore, so there's lots of other places that are also selling it. Barnes & Noble, Powell's Books are not related to me. But if you go to if you just Google it, you'll end up either on the Penguin Random House website or on Amazon or whatever, and you should be able to buy it there. It is in stores now, and it is most certainly on the internet.
Great, great. Gosh, Tia, thank you so much. That was awesome. All right. You know, thank you so much for listening to the show. And I know you've learned a great deal about dementia, and how you can manage your family who might have it, or for your future, for yourself, for your mother, your father, or your loved ones. So do share the show with whoever you know that may be impacted by dementia. I know that it can change their life for the better. If this is your first time listening in, make sure to subscribe so I can continue to serve you with the most current information on natural health and strategies that you can take today to feel better. Also, connect with me on Instagram at Dr. Suzanne. I post regularly on how to become the best version of yourself through nutrition, self-care, lifestyle, and eating kimchi. And what's great is that you can engage with me directly. Yes, I respond to all of my comments personally. Now, if you need help in digging deeper with your health issues, I work with people globally through phone and Skype consultations. And you get my contact info on my website, drsuzanne.com. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.